Good afternoon. Welcome. It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Bill and Wendy enjoying their holiday vacation. The jailbreak not happening tonight. It's happening right now from 1 to 3. That's when, because nobody's here to stop me. The wardens are all out of the office. All the brass is gone. Don Norton is here, and he always just lets me do whatever I want.
Look at that handsome guy in the control room there. Watch out.
How are you, man? Good to be with you again.
I'm good. Good to see you, and you look great, and look at that.
Thank you.
Holiday, is that a nice sweater on there?
It's a little cardigan, because I try to, Kevin Richter, who produces the Bill and Wendy program, who you will be speaking to if you call in at 312-981-7200, and you must be nice to Kevin to get to me. That's the rule. But Kevin always brings the cool sweater, so I was trying to hip it up a little bit, Don, so I didn't look like some old man coming into hang out from 1 to 3. Now I'm a hip contemporary. Well, an old man in a sweater. That's what I am.
Either
I think
that or you're
twins.
Mr. Rogers, one of the other.
I could. Oh, it is a beautiful day in the neighborhood until these snow squalls blow in that you're frightening everyone with.
Oh, man, I know. It's on its way.
Well, that's when I spoke with Tom Skilling last night, and yes, I'm name dropping to start the show because I'm a big deal. I spoke with Tom Skilling last night. He said they're going to be very isolated.
Yeah.
They'll pop up here and there. Maybe you'll never see one. There's a few flurries blowing around outside the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. So, we'll see how long that lasts. No big accumulation. Don't panic. Everything's fine. Everything's going to be fine this afternoon. We have a big show planned. And I notice I said big. I don't like to say great because that builds unnecessary expectations. Seriously, you don't need me telling you it's great. At 3 o'clock, you'll judge for yourself. But in just a couple of minutes, Judd Surratt is going to join us. We're going to preview the Blackhawks-Nashville game tonight. Also, I won't ask Judd about this, but Nashville, really? You're sissies. Why are you? Nashville does everything they can, and they have been for years, to try to keep Blackhawks fans out of the Bridgestone Arena. If your team can't handle visiting fans, boo-hoo. Suck it up, Buttercup. That's how it goes. So we'll talk to Judd, get the preview of that. We are also going to talk on it. Don, do you like the band Chicago?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay. I thought the way you said that, I was like, no, they owe me money. I've got a big problem with the band Chicago.
I
love the band Chicago, and there is a new documentary. It's actually been out for a little while at festivals, but it is going to premiere on CNN on Sunday. It is called Now More Than Ever, The History of Chicago, and that we will talk to the director of that fine film, Peter Pardini, after 1:30.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, it's a buddy of mine is actually featured in the film as a super fan. I've loved Chicago for years. I remember going to see them when they were at Chicago Fest. This was back, it had to be late 70s, maybe.
So Lee Locknane, who's the trumpeter, was the first cousin of a really good friend of mine in high school.
His
cousin. So, we rub shoulders once in a while.
Lee, one of the founding members who's still with the band.
Yes, that's correct.
There's still a number of founding members. They have been touring every year for 50 years.
I saw them a couple years ago, I think, out at Northerly Island out here.
Okay,
They were there with the Doobie Brothers. Boy, there's a twin bill, huh?
I was going to say, that's a great bill.
Yep.
And then I look at Kevin. He doesn't know who either one of those bands are.
Oh,
what?
Come on.
Huh?
No, I'm long train running.
They're long train running. The Doobies. There you go. It's always the Doobie Brothers are another one I'd like to see. I want to see Chicago. I saw them a few years ago. I haven't seen them recently, but I want to see them again because it's one of those bands. It's the first band I remember as a kid listening to and hearing the horn section and that making a big impression on me.
That's a big Chicago sound, you know, the Buckingham,
it is.
Chicago.
Yep.
A lot of those groups had brass. It was so cool.
So we will find out all about the film and what it took to make this film. And he had unprecedented access to the band and to fans, so that'll be exciting. Also, Steve Dale will join us at 2:30 for his regular hit on the Bill and Wendy program. We talked to Steve about a story that broke yesterday about a new federal court ruling. We'll also talk to him about how maybe your pet needs some resolutions. So we'll talk to Steve about all kinds of things and, of course, take your questions at 312-981-7200. And then speaking of resolutions, people start thinking about them now. And we'll write them down maybe on Sunday, and on Monday the new year is going to start. Well, I have some resolutions that you just should not make, so we'll get into that after 2 o'clock as well. So a lot to get to. It's always more fun, as I said, when you're involved. 312-981-7200 or on social media. It's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. All right, let's do this. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we will talk to Judd Surratt. We'll preview tonight's Blackhawks Nashville tilt at the Bridgestone Arena in Music City. We'll do that after this on WGN. Oh, yeah. Hockey season in full swing. The Blackhawks looking to bounce back tonight when they head down to Nashville to the Bridgestone Arena. If you're going, make sure you wear red because they hate that down there. Three straight losses for the Hawks, but they're always little lulls in the season. The man who does pre, post, and intermission for the Blackhawks here on WGN Radio, Judd Surratt, joins me right now. Judd, thanks for taking some time this afternoon. Always good to talk to you.
Great being on with you, Brian.
All right, listen, the big news yesterday, not only for the team but for Blackhawks fans, is Artemi Panarin signs a two-year extension. That's great. Some people are saying, well, why wasn't it long-term? That's because in 2 years he becomes eligible for no movement clauses, right?
Well, you've got a couple of different factors. I think long-term the Blackhawks just weren't going to be able to meet his demands. Remember, if you're going to do that, you know, you've got to buy out some years of unrestricted free agency. And, okay, you know, basically, you know, this was sort of a happy medium, you know, for Panarin. You know, in 2 years after the contract kicks in after 2019, and he's over with that, then he has the ability to head back on the market and he can potentially clean up as an unrestricted free agent. But for the time being, this keeps him in the place that he wants to be. And, you know, playing with the line mates, playing with the organization that he enjoys playing with, and it's a happy medium. You know, plus he gets paid in the short term, but there's a risk, obviously, for the Blackhawks on the other side, obviously, because in a couple of years they're going through this negotiation again. I think there's a hope, and again, you know, it's a strong hope that maybe you'll see some movement in the salary cap in the National Hockey League, which could make it a lot easier for the Blackhawks to retain a guy like Panarin. But I think going into it, the Blackhawks wanted to keep him. He wanted to stay, and they were able to find a compromise here with a two-year, $12 million deal.
Well, there have been reports, and the salary cap is always confusing when you get into it, but there's been reports that Commissioner Bettman had said that next year the cap may go up about $2 million, which to regular people, $2 million is a lot of money. When it's a professional team, does that amount make that big a difference?
Well, I think any amount in particular for the Blackhawks and the team that's up against the cap, I think every dollar counts. You know, again, that's just speculation at this point on what the cap may be like. You have a couple of other variables that are going on there. And again, that was an early projection based on hockey-related revenue. Basically, the salary cap is projected based on hockey-related revenue. We don't exactly know that number yet. We're only halfway through the season. Mm-hmm. You know, not to get too technical, but I think that the salary cap, they were hopeful, would continue to slide up, but because the Canadian economy took a downturn and because their economy was so rooted in oil and oil prices, I know we're kind of digressing from hockey.
No, I think it's fascinating how everything ties in, though.
But this is, you know, this is really what changed a lot of what you've seen in the salary cap in the National Hockey League, because the revenue, what you're getting in hockey-related revenue, almost fell by a quarter in Canada.
Wow.
So that would make a significant difference. You know, I don't know what the price of a Canadian dollar is right now versus a U.S. dollar, but it's probably, you know, 75 to 70 cents on the dollar, and that would make a significant difference in the salary cap, because remember, you got a lot of money tied up, obviously, in your core players, and as you should, because here's the thing, and a lot of people talk about, you know, oh, well, they should trade Crawford, or they should trade this guy, or they should trade that guy. As soon as you trade that player, you are looking to try and reacquire him, or reacquire a player like that. So it's just not that easy. So we'll see what Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks are able to do going forward here in the next couple of years. You know, another factor that you're going to have to think about is Las Vegas is coming in. Every team will lose at least one player to the expansion draft. And the other thing for a team like Vegas, and they want to be competitive right off the hop,
right,
is what do they choose to take off of a team like the Blackhawks? I think two names that come to mind immediately are guys like Marcus Kruger or Trevor Van Riemsdyk. And we have no idea who's going to be exposed as of yet.
Well, but that's how do they decide?
Those are two likely names.
How do they decide then, Judd, who would be exposed to the expansion draft?
Oh, now we're getting really complicated. you know, so that has to do with age and experience, which players have no movement clauses. So maybe we'll talk about that.
Yeah, that's going to be. We'll have to have
as we get to the summer.
We'll have a longer
those
thing.
Two guys.
Okay.
Yes, you know, but in particular, guys like Marcus Kruger and Trevor Van Riemsdyk, because they played enough games in the league, because of their age, because they don't have any, they don't have a no movement clause. Those would be two guys that could potentially go, or who would be exposed in the expansion draft. And we have no idea who the Blackhawks are going to protect at this point. But for Las Vegas, because a lot of people would say, well, why would you want to pick up a contract like Marcus Kruger?
It's expensive.
But a team like Las Vegas, you still have to get to the salary cap floor. You know, there's a ceiling and a floor.
Right.
So the teams have to spend a minimum amount of money. So you may want to pick up a terrific defensive forward like Marcus Kruger at a price of around $3 million.
All right, let's, since you mentioned defensive players, let's talk about tonight in Nashville, because the other night after the loss to the Jets, Coach Q said the defense was the weak part of the game the other night. Do you predict that there will be some changes in the pairings tonight on the blue line?
It certainly sounds that way, and Joel Quenneville sort of alluded to the fact that Brian Campbell could actually be a healthy scratch tonight. Now, we'll have to wait and see what happens when the lineups are actually distributed after warm-up, but he's played in, I want to say, 423 consecutive games.
Wow.
So, you know, it would be interesting to see if he's out of the lineup. Regardless, just watching the way the D-pairs went through practice, it looked like Joel started to shake things up, where he had Keith with Van Riemsdyk. He had Jalmerson with Seabrook. He had Forsling with Campbell. He had Kempney with Roosevelt. So not sure. And I actually had a chance to ask Joel Quenneville about the way the team defended and what he didn't see from his D-core. And I think overall it was the way they were exiting their zone. It was the first pass they were making, the decisions they were making, and then at the same time, how involved they got in the play offensively. By no means were they the only reason that the Blackhawks came up short the other night against the Winnipeg Jets? Because, you know, Brian and I, you and I had a chance to talk about this afterward. I think it's about a mentality for the Blackhawks, and that's what they have to get back to. In fact, I talked to Campbell about this, that the effort, the desperation level, the battle level has to go up for this team. And even Joel Quenneville said, we've been way too easy to play against. So we'll see if they can harness a much tougher brand of hockey, be tougher to play against here tonight as they try and snap that three-game winless streak.
Now, I was listening the other night to the post game, and you mentioned that defenses have adapted to the Blackhawks style, and now they're really pinching in the neutral zone. They're making the Blackhawks have to chip and chase, which is something that the Hawks can do, but they don't like to do. Now, Nashville has a really strong defense, even though P.K. Subban is out tonight. What are the Hawks going to have to do to realize, okay, everybody's playing us differently. How do we combat that?
Well, I think first and foremost, Brian, they have to get off to better starts. I want to say it's 7 or 8 of the last 11 games. They've allowed the first goal. And because they've had to play from behind, it's allowed the other team to change the way that they defend the Blackhawks and the way that they go through the neutral zone, because they're not forced to try and generate offense. They're waiting for mistakes. But regardless, I think a lot of teams, what they're trying to do is they're trying to dare the Blackhawks to carry the puck in. And so they'll throw 3 or 4 guys across the blue line, or they'll try and stack the neutral zone. And so it's difficult a lot of times, and as skilled as the Blackhawks are, to try and be able to navigate with the puck, either by yourself or to try and make a couple of passes to enter the zone with possession. It can be difficult, and if you're unable to execute it, that allows other teams to be able to counter, and because of that counterattack, you may have an odd man opportunity, and then the Blackhawks, you could be potentially chasing the game by more than a goal. So I think for the Blackhawks, and you'll hear the coaches and the players talk about this all the time, that we have to do a better job of managing the puck. We have to put the puck in better spots where we can get it. So if you're coming with speed through the neutral zone, and granted, for Kane and Panarin and Anisimov and Taves and for a lot of these guys, your first option should be to try and carry it in.
Right.
Should be to try and make a play and bring it in with possession rather than chip and chase. That's the way that they're built. But if you cannot do that, you have to find a way to put the puck in a spot where you can go get it. You have to force that defenseman to turn, and you can beat him to that puck or put it in an area where one of your wingers or one of your teammates can do that. They have to do a better job of doing that if the Nashville Predators try and clog it up. Now, typically, under Peter Laviolette over the last couple of seasons, they've played a very up-tempo game. They've changed things around since the coaching change, and Barry Trotz has left, and Peter Laviolette is there. So I don't necessarily see the Predators changing it up, but this is also a team that has struggled at the start of games. This is a team that desperately needs to get itself back into the Western Conference playoff hunt. Even though they might look close to a playoff spot, there's a lot of teams that they're basically vying for that last spot right. with, or they have to pass in order to get into that playoff position. They've been very inconsistent all season long. These two teams haven't seen one another since basically the first week of the season.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see, and we will be listening tonight. Judd, I always appreciate the information and the time. Thanks a lot.
Anytime, Brian. Take care.
Take care. That's Judd Surratt. He handles the pre, post, and intermission shows during the Blackhawks broadcast right here on 720 WGN. We'll do this, then it's news time, and then we will talk to the director of Now More Than Ever, The History of Chicago. That's the band, not the city. We'll talk to Peter Pardini after the news on WGN. Probably all we can play without having to pay for it. That, of course, Chicago. Old days, they've been around for 50 years. 2017 will mark the 50th anniversary of the band Chicago. And Peter Pardini is the director of a new documentary called Now More Than Ever, The History of Chicago. It premieres New Year's Day on CNN. I've been familiar with it for a while because one of the people featured in it is a good friend of mine, a good friend of the Bill and Wendy Show, Jimmy Pardo, who is a super fan. Peter, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking some time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, Jimmy told me that he's been cut out of this CNN edition, and he's he's very, very upset about it. There was time constraints on CNN, but I heard about the film when Jimmy first was part of it for you, and it's terrific because I've been a fan of Chicago since I was a kid. What drew you to this band and made you think, wow, these guys are perfect for a documentary? Somebody has to chronicle this.
Well, I had been working for them for a few years before I even started making the documentary. I was their tour videographer, and Lee Locknane had hired me, and I just been, you know, kind of unwittingly researching for a documentary just by being around these guys, and just the stories I'd hear from them, you know, such as like stories about doing zero G in private planes in the early 70s, and you know, all their stories at Caribou Ranch, and you know, just the fact that, you know, I was sick of hearing all of my friends. I was so young when I started making the movie that people my age were like, thought that Chicago was just this 80s band.
Right.
And so I thought, you know, what better band to do a documentary about? One that everybody knows their music, but like almost nobody knows the story besides super fans, you know?
Well, that's it. For a band that's been around for so long, they are kind of enigmatic because they were never, except for the death of Terry Kath, which we'll touch on in a minute, they never really made headlines for scandals. And this was, you know, they were really huge back in the day before cell phone videos and all of that, social media. So people knew their music, but you're right, we didn't really know what was going on. So as you kept hearing these stories, was there one particular angle that you went, yeah, this is where we have to kind of take the documentary, or it was just, these guys are fascinating as a whole, I've got to get it out there?
I wanted to focus on the brotherhood of the band because I find it fascinating that you could have four original members who've basically had a marriage for 50 years and are still doing it. And, you know, they never fight. They never, it's Lee's line is always, you know, they know when to get in each other's way and when to get out of each other's way. And I wanted to focus on, okay, how do you last for 50 years without killing each other?
That's the question I had, yeah. Because we've seen how many behind the music things or read stories about bands that implode after a couple years and a couple albums, let alone the, you know, the millions of hits that, or the millions of shows, hours of, you know, hours and hours of stage time and backstage time that these guys have said. What is it? The know when to get in each other's way and get out of each other's way is a nice platitude, but there's something more than that to make it 50 years.
It really is, and I know this sounds like a platitude too, but it really is the music, and you know they love playing the music, and what I saw was that every time they made a change in the band, it revolved around either touring or playing while touring. So I would definitely say that the reason that they've been able to keep it together is that the music's so great and that they love doing it. And, you know, I know that's kind of a, you know, platitude of an answer, but it really is the truth because, you know, when I was their videographer and we tour the world and you see the way the crowd reacts the same exact way no matter where you are to Saturday in the park. I just don't know how you would ever get tired of that if you were playing that on stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's one of those things. And the millions I was trying to grab but it eluded me was the over 100 million records that they sold. I mean, these guys have been doing it and doing it successfully for 50 years. But yeah, I watched, just to compare, you know, I watched the big documentary on the Eagles. And one of the things that some of the members who left, they were like, oh, we're tired of playing these hits. And it's like, well, how do you get tired of playing a song that brings joy to so many millions of people? And so you never saw that with them. They're playing Saturday in the Park. They're playing, you know, old days like we just played coming in. They still get the same charge out of playing that music?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can't go to any show and see any of the songs they're playing. I mean, because you have to remember too that there's a lot of songs that aren't being played too. I mean, Sometimes they don't play Old Days, and that's one of their most recognizable songs. So they now have two sets in their show. When I first started, it was one set that was about 2 hours, and now it's two sets at 2.5 hours. And I don't know how these guys who are pretty much all nearing either their 60s or 70s are doing this, but you must get some type of charge from just playing the stuff that, you know, brings other people so much joy.
You got to figure the adrenaline is pumping when they're up there. Somebody texted in, Peter, and they wanted to know if Peter Cetera was involved in the documentary at all.
Peter Cetera was not involved in the documentary, but trust me, we tried several times. And, you know, the thing with that is that you can't force someone to sit in front of a camera for 2.5 hours to talk to you. You know, and that goes the same for, you know, Bill Champlin declined. Dwayne Bailey was an interesting one because, you know, I tried to get everybody in the documentary, and Dwayne Bailey was one that was saying yes the whole time and then saying no and then saying yes. So it's a very fascinating thing. It's very fortunate that Danny Serafin agreed to do the documentary because it lends another perspective to all the stories that you're hearing. You know, and I'm not sure how he's going to feel about what he sees in the documentary, but, you know, it's as accurate as I could make all the stories. And I feel that Peter Cetera felt that for some reason the band was going to be editing the documentary, which is just not the case. I mean, I edited this thing from my apartment in Studio City, California, and no one in the band even saw it until it was done. So I want everybody who's going to watch it on CNN to know that this is the perspective of a filmmaker and not the editing of the band itself.
And you mentioned CNN. The documentary, Now More Than Ever, The History of Chicago, premieres New Year's Day, Sunday, on CNN, 7 o'clock and 9 o'clock here in the Midwest, 8 and 10 Eastern, of course, if you like to do that mathematical conversion, which I'm not comfortable with, but I did it now as a courtesy. Peter Pardini is my guest. Can you hold on for a minute, Peter?
Yes.
All right. Fantastic. We will talk more about the documentary. If you have some questions, 312-981-7200 or you can text them, you can call, whatever you want to do. We'll talk more about the band Chicago and this wonderful documentary after this on WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Talking with Peter Pardini. He is the director of Now More Than Ever, The History of Chicago. A wonderful documentary on this band premieres on CNN on New Year's Day, January 1st at 7 o'clock. It'll repeat again then at 9 o'clock, and then they will do encore performances of it on January 7th. Of course, you'll be able to stream it everywhere. Peter, you mentioned that you know, you were working as a videographer with the band before you decided to do the documentary. As you approached the current lineup and said, hey, I want to do this film, did they all immediately jump at it, or did you face a little bit of resistance from some of the band?
I think that there was, you know, it was both. You know, there was the guys who were, they were all open to doing a documentary, but I think that there was the obvious hesitation of letting someone who was 26 years old do it, you know?
Yeah. Because what does this kid know?
Yeah. You know, they're so used to answering the questions that I would ask or the questions I didn't ask from people who were their peers. And I think the hump that was gotten over very quickly, you know, with a week's time after I pitched it, you know, was just, are you sure that you can do this? And, you know, I said, well, you know, I've seen Rock Docs and I know your guys' story, and let's just sit down and do some interviews and we'll see what happens and we'll go with it. So basically what we did was we interviewed the original members, and I put together a demo reel, like a 20-minute demo reel of what I thought the movie could look like. And then from there, they gave the green light to go the rest of the way. And I really have to, you know, thank Lee Lochnane for staying behind me the whole way, as well as Peter Chiavarelli, the band's manager. They both were behind me from the very get-go to get this made. And I'm really proud of it. And I think that people are going to see a side of Chicago that they may have not known before. I mean, I know you guys are in Chicago and there's people there know.
Well,
the
there's
story,
people, I mean, there's possibly, people here that are texting in that they, you know, they went to high school with some of the band, or their brother went to, you know, their brother went to high school. They want to know if the band ever played at Steinmetz High School. You know, it's, so, I mean, there's people who grew up literally with this band and are very excited about this, because you talk to them about everything from the early days at DePaul, where you've got them, you know, you imagine that these guys, oh, yes, they dreamed of being successful. But back then, they could have never imagined 50 years of success that they've had, could they?
No, I don't think so. That's that is one of the questions I asked point blank like that. You know, when did you guys know you were a success? And they never, they have that Midwest, you know, work ethic where it's always about, let's go out and do the next thing. Let's do the next thing. And I think Robert once told me, and it's not in the documentary, but he once told me that he didn't realize how successful he was until he had asked, I think, an accountant, you know, do I have enough to buy my mom a house or something along those lines? And they're like, yeah, I think you do.
Yeah, a couple times over. How many houses does she need? You could pick it up.
I mean, they recorded 5 albums in 3 years. I mean, think about that for a second. You
That's
know?
Amazing.
It takes Justin Timberlake, you know, once every 7 years to release 2 albums. And yeah. It's crazy.
No, they were putting out music. And I mentioned to Kevin, my producer today, last week when we were working together, that my favorite Christmas album, because we were talking about Christmas music, is Chicago's Christmas album. I love their Christmas album. And some people don't even know they put one out, Kevin included. Didn't know that there was a Chicago Christmas album. And it's wonderful. I want to ask about Terry Kathan and his death. At that point, the band was, you know, they were peaking. They were really hot. When you talk to the members of the band about that time, was there ever a moment where they thought, well, maybe we should be done, the band should be over? Or how did they deal with that? Because that was a huge loss to this group.
Yeah, I think that they all probably pondered that based on their answers to me. You know, I think they all pondered the idea of, well, what if, you know, the Beatles ended when the Beatles would never get back together when John Lennon died, because, you know, that was a thing. Maybe they'll get back together one day. But I think that, again, it's that Midwestern ethic. Joe Mantegna, I think, said it best. He told me, and he actually was on Jimmy Pardo's podcast and talked about it, and was saying that, you know, it's like, we're not going to stop. I mean, this is, Terry would want us to keep going because, I mean, what's the point in stopping? And what I always say is, most people don't have the ability to just have a family member die or a brother die and say, well, I'm done working.
Exactly.
I have to go back to work. And that's, I think, the way they saw it.
Yeah, and that is a Midwestern thing, because a band is a little different than, you know, you or I going to work. You know, there's a chemistry there. There's the input of a certain member. But the rest of the guys are able to hold it together and continue to put out great work. Somebody texted in with a question, and I'm wondering this myself, and it goes back to what we were talking about everybody staying out of everybody's way when they need to, or getting in each other's way, and the longevity, 50 years of a band is unheard of. How is it partly because, do they treat it, the monies and everything, as equals to a point? Is everybody must be happy with their cut to stay together that long, right? Because you can only imagine the monies that are coming into this band from touring and royalties and everything else.
Yeah, you know, I've never personally asked any of them, like, oh, how much do you make?
Well, yeah, not a specific amount.
I don't think it's a deal like the Eagles documentary, where there's an entire section of that movie where they're talking about, well, I need more, I need this,
yes,
I need that. I can say without a doubt that that's not how it is in Chicago, but
perfect.
I just think that, yeah, it's everyone's, and you'll hear anybody in the band say this, that they go out there and they play, and it feels like one unit playing together and not oh, here's this guy. You know what I mean? It's,
right.
It's Chicago.
Yeah, that's true. It is. It's always. It's never so and so and Chicago. It's Chicago. It's the band.
Yeah.
Now, one of the distinctive sound is the horn section. Lauren had a quick question about that. Lauren, you're talking to Peter Pardini on WGN. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
The Buckinghams had an early horns. Early Buckinghams had a horn section that sort of disappeared right about the start of Chicago. And I thought, did some of those Chicago guys come over from the Buckinghams?
As far as I know, no. I know that their producer, James William Guercio, was part of the Buckinghams and produced the Buckinghams. But the Chicago horn section met mostly at DePaul, and they were not part of that group.
All right. There you go, Lawrence. So that answers that. Because the other band from Chicago with the horns, the Buckinghams, it's a big part of their sound as well. Was there ever a point where, as you talked to these guys, that the horn, you know, a lot of bands, maybe they featured horns here and there, and then the horns would go away? The horns were never going away in Chicago, were they?
No, and when that started to happen in the mid-80s with Cetera, there was obviously a rift there.
Yeah.
Because I think the idea from the get-go was that they would be a rock band with horns. And, you know, I actually think, you know, I love those 80s songs that Cetera wrote and that David Foster wrote. And
yeah.
I think they're even better now in concert when the horns are part of it. I mean, they add so much to, you know, the song. And even, you know, when they play with other bands, you know, they play with Earth, Wind, Fire, they play with the Doobie Brothers, and you hear the Chicago horns on other bands' songs, it just adds something that you're taking a great song and taking it to another level that you might not have known was there before.
Is there an official party line amongst the band members about Cetera leaving, or do they open up on an individual level, like, well, this is how I felt about them, and this is how I felt about them?
I don't think any of them have. I think the biggest misconception is that there's a personal beef against Peter Cetera. I think that they would still be playing with him if he wanted to tour as much as they wanted to. You know, I know you're going to get a lot of people who say that's not true. They didn't like him. They didn't like him being the center of attention. But the whole idea of the band was, like we were saying, it's Chicago. It's not supposed to be one guy. And the four original members that I've talked to, as well as Danny, so the five, mm-hmm. five of the original members I've talked to, all kind of agreed that Cetera has one of the greatest voices of all time. He was a great singer, a really great bass player, but there just were disagreements. And, you know, it's like a sports team. If you're going to continue for 50 years, there's going to have to be changes.
Sure.
Unless everybody is willing to play together. I mean, you never see any single player rarely play on the same NBA team for his whole career. So it's amazing that there's even four left, you know?
Yeah, it is amazing. Before I let you go, for a rock documentary to be premiering on CNN, to me, it seems like a strange place. How did you end up on CNN?
I attribute that to, you know, we won a couple festivals as well as the band, you know, they were inducted into the Hall of Fame this year.
Right.
So I think it was the perfect time to kind of highlight the 50th anniversary of a strictly American band. I don't think there's really any better place for us right now because of just the amount of viewers that we can get from CNN. And,
right.
and they've, you know, if anybody's turned on CNN in the last 2 weeks, they've seen an ad for it.
Yes, they have.
They're not paying attention. But I'm thrilled to be, you know, having my first movie be on CNN and to bring a spotlight to this band that I think deserves so much more credit than they get, even with the 100 million albums sold.
And real quick, you mentioned Joe Mantegna. We jokingly mentioned Jimmy Pardo. What other super fans did you talk to regarding the band?
Joe is the only one that ends up in the CNN version.
Okay.
But there is the full-length version that's going to be coming out on Blu-ray with 30 minutes of extra footage as well as 2 hours of special features. You know, we interviewed Mantegna, we interviewed Jimmy, we interviewed the former GM of the Dodgers, Ned Colletti. We interviewed some friends of the band, and it was more keeping in line with, you know, the family aspect.
Yeah.
Of it. You know, I didn't go out and find a random celebrity that may not be personal friends with them,
exactly,
regardless of their status. So it was fun to make the movie.
Well, Peter, congratulations on a great piece of filmmaking. Now more than ever, The History of Chicago premieres on CNN on New Year's Day, January 1st, 7 and 9 o'clock Central Time, and then they will rebroadcast that on January 7th, again, 7 and 9 o'clock. It's been great talking to you, Peter, and I look forward to seeing it on CNN and then when the release comes for the entire deal.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Congratulations again. That's Peter Pardini. All right, let's do this, and then it's news time on WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. I'll be with you again tomorrow at this same time. We'll talk to Bobcat Goldthwait tomorrow and have lots of other fun. And tomorrow we have something special to give you. Yes, a parting gift as I finish my time filling in for Bill and Wendy. We'll give you a little something. That's tomorrow, though. But today, Steve Dell will be with us after 2:30 talking about all sorts of pet-related news and taking your calls, of course, at 312-981-7200. All right. New Year's Eve is Saturday. We all know that. Everybody's getting ready. Oh, what am I going to do for 2017? The country is changing. Everything's going on. I need to change myself. I know what I'll do. I'll make a resolution, and that's going to be perfect. And fast forward to, I'll give everybody a couple weeks. So let's say mid-January. Fast forward and you realize those resolutions are for naught. I've never been a big resolution guy. I think back when I was younger, I would try to make resolutions. And I just never, I would never stick to them, like most of us. But some people still do. They still write them down. Kevin told me when I told him what we were going to be talking about today, he said, "Ooh, I just made my resolution. Do you want to, can you, does it count? Is it like a wish if you share your resolution out loud? Does it go away, or is that better because now you have public scrutiny?"
Yeah, I think I need to put it out there so people can hold me to it.
Oh, all right.
It makes it harder, too.
Yeah, that is. It's harder. It's harder to ignore it, right, Don?
Right.
All right, Kevin, do you want to share? Or?
In 2017, I am going to learn how to sew.
Really?
Yes.
Like with a sewing machine or just like put a button on sewing?
I'm talking, you know, with a needle and thread in my hand. I need, well, here's why. I have a couple ripped pockets in some of my jeans and a coat, and I got to put a couple buttons on, and nobody will seem to do it for me. And every time I ask my wife, she says, "Well, there's thread in the medicine closet."
Yeah.
I said, "Okay, well, I need to learn how to
You've
sew."
You've never
then.
Sewn anything?
Never sewn anything.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that should be the kind of resolution. You should be able to master that.
I think so. I have a whole year to figure it out.
Pretty much. You should have it mastered by the time the show's over. Let's be honest. You know, the hardest part is getting the needle through the thread.
Yeah, well, and then I got to figure out, like, so what, you tie, like, a knot at the end of the thread?
Some people don't. I do. I tie a little knot at the end of the thread, so when you pull it through the first time, it'll catch. Right, Don?
Yes.
Don, you're a seamstress from way back. You used to work in the garment district, didn't you, before
you
your news career?
You are way off base. Go ahead. Continue. I'm really learning.
No, you
I'm
don't, you
notes.
Never tied a knot in the end of the thread?
I did, absolutely.
Okay.
I remember that.
No,
I remember
sure
that.
You do. How would you sew then, Don?
No, I do. I do. You know, tie the little thing on there.
Right.
It's hard.
It's tough, especially with big man fingers.
Yeah, you get big fingers here.
That's why I think some people don't tie the knot at the end. They just leave it out and then maybe make a loop after they go through the first time.
See, this is all over my... See, I got to Google it.
Yeah, it's... That part isn't probably that hard. You know why? When I was a kid, maybe early grade school, one year in... They called it summer school, but it was all kind of fun kind of classes, like cooking and things like that. And I took some class where we sewed some stuff. So I was... Now, my mom used to sew. She had the big Singer sewing machine in the house, and she would make like clothes that we'd wear and stuff. I can't do that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get that advanced.
And my wife used to make Halloween costumes, elaborate Halloween costumes for my daughter. But then she would sew nothing else. I still will occasionally ask her to put a button on only because I'm lazy. But I can do it. I can do that. I think that's a good achievable resolution.
I just have this one pair of jeans and my keys keep sticking out of the hole in the pocket. It's driving me crazy. I got to fix it.
And the nice thing about a pocket is it doesn't have to be neat.
No.
So all you have to do is loop it through a few times, pull it snug, and then you're golden.
See, what I'm thinking, I'm going to take their blue jeans. I'm going to take some black denim, put it on the inside of the pocket, just sew it in there like a little patch, call it a day.
Look at that.
I got to figure out the stitching process.
Now you're
first.
Getting elaborate. Now you're throwing in a patch.
That's
it. What, now you didn't say anything about patching clothes. You just said you were going to sew a little something. Now, I don't know. And Don just scoffed at that. Don like he knows all about sewing. What happened there, Don? Where'd that come from?
So what's next then? Okay, so we get the sewing thing done. You can figure that out. What do you think, January 15th?
Yeah, and then we call 2017 a success.
Right, boom. Then he's done. Well, then, the nice thing is, then he picks up a side gig. Because every time somebody comes into the station with a button missing or a hole in their pocket or, you know, something, Kevin can, and he pulls out his price list. Sure, a button is $50, which seems excessive. I'm going to warn you, that's too high.
We do need a tailor, though.
We do need a tailor on
staff. WGN
tailor. Maybe
some
custom clothing. I would like a nice waistcoat made for myself.
You know, I'll try my best. I can't guarantee anything that you'll want to wear, but hey, you'll get something.
I would like working buttons on my sport coats that you
whip
up for
me. I can promise
you
that.
All right. Now, somebody suggests you go to a tailor and observe. We learn best by that process, or watch the very attractive Deborah Norville on PBS's So This. I didn't know that Deborah Norville had a show on PBS. Not that I have nothing against watching Deborah Norville. And that's not, I'm not objectifying her. I'm just saying she's, you know, easy to watch. But I didn't know she had a Sew This kind of thing. All right. Carrie's got some instructions on sewing. We will talk to Carrie and get those instructions to help Kevin achieve his New Year's resolution. And if you have a resolution you want to share, that's cool. I have some that you should not do. So if you've made a resolution in the past and it was a complete disaster, I'd like to hear those stories as a cautionary tale, too. We'll get to all of that on the other side of this on WGN.
Met my old lover in the grocery store. The snow was falling Christmas Eve.
Oh, the most depressing song in America, same old Lang Syne. Talking, of course, about New Year's resolutions, because Kevin has shared that his resolution for 2017 is to learn to sew. Now, I know I've exaggerated this, blown this into that you're going to be making custom suits. You just want to do some simple tailoring, correct? Some simple work.
Yeah, I just want to close a few holes in my clothing and maybe get a button or two on here, yeah.
All right. Now, people are... I know if you had asked anybody, hey, Brian Noonan's going to be in for Bill and Wendy. What do you think he's going to talk about? There would be a myriad of answers, none of which would be, he's probably going to have sewing talk.
Yeah, that's my fault. I'm bringing the ship down.
No, you're not bringing the ship down. I think it's fascinating that people are weighing in nonstop. Carol has a little advice. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. So what's your advice for Kevin?
Okay, this is button on going on a shirt?
Yes. Is a shirt, okay. Or where do you want to put your button?
Yeah, it'll be on, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because you need different thread if you're putting it on a shirt versus a coat. So if a shirt, you need because you need thicker, because the coat is heavier, the buttons are heavier. For a shirt, you just go to Joann Fabrics and pick up the color that's going to match your shirt. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
You're going to, take off 12, 16 inches of thread, thread through the eye of the needle.
That's where it gets tricky, Carol. That's the hard part. Now, do you bring the thread to the needle or the needle to the thread?
Whatever works.
Okay. Needle threaders are good. Those are easy.
I didn't know those existed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they exist.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. Okay. And they have some, or I hope they still sell them, that are just a little metal piece. It's got a pointy part on the end.
If you buy one of those little sewing kits, like at the checkout line,
it'll probably have
it always has one of those in there.
Do they come pre-threaded?
No, needles don't come pre-threaded.
So you cut your thread and you've threaded it, hopefully. You're going to then grab the two ends and draw the needle to the middle of the thread. All right?
Okay.
So you're going to make a knot with those two ends. All right?
That's what I was talking about earlier. Don seemed to scoff at the knots.
This is what you do. You take the two ends together, and it's been so long since I've done it. You
so you get the little knot, but the knot...
You wrap it around your index finger.
Right.
And then you roll it off with your thumb, and you should be able to create a knot by doing that.
So just a roly garbage knot?
It's really, garbage knot, because all it has to do is stop the thread from going through the needle hole that you push through the shirt.
Okay.
All right, Carol, let's...
shirt, if you put down the button.
Let's jump ahead, because here's my question. This is where I always run into problems. Now, on a shirt, it's not so much, but you mentioned a coat. When you're putting a button on, a lot of times you don't want the button flush up to the fabric. So people do they leave a little nub under the button between the nub.
You can use a matchstick.
Okay.
You can use a couple of straight pins.
Okay, and that'll be enough to leave enough room for the button to go through the buttonhole. Kevin is shaking his head.
This is way more complicated than I expected.
It's hard when you're just hearing it.
Okay.
You need to watch it.
So you've got the knot on the end of the thread and the needles at the other end. You position the button where it goes, and you sew it on. You're going to go in one direction crosswise. You're going to make a little X two, three, four times. Then you go the other way two or three, four times. All right? You're almost done.
Well, yeah, but now comes the hard part.
Now it's, now you got to get another shirt.
This is easier than you can imagine, okay?
It sounds more complicated than even I could imagine, and I've done it, Carol.
All right, so on the back side, okay, you're going to just, on the material, you're going to draw the needle through, but don't pull it through. So you're going to put the needle halfway,
just hope it goes through. Just pray.
Holding the needle and the thread that's looped from the front of your shirt to the needle, you're going to wrap that thread two or three times around the needle, making a little loop around the needle. Can you picture it?
Yes, and then just pull it through.
Then draw the needle and hold tight to those little loops that you spun around the needle, and slowly draw the needle through.
Wow.
You're
making it sound very exciting, Carol. Carol, listen, I appreciate all the advice. Thank you so much. You've scared Kevin to death. You've somehow made sewing a button on sound erotic, which I didn't think was possible. So it's a win-win for everybody as we wrap up 2016. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
There you
go. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Wow. It's slowly done. Oh,
yeah,
put
I
it
like
through
that
slowly
part.
Halfway and then loop it around. That was horrifying.
I'm getting texts from friends. Can't you just buy an automatic needle threader? Isn't there something like that?
It's a little, like I said, it comes in the little sewing kits.
Yeah.
Just you push it through the needle. Yeah, that makes it easy. It's a cheater way.
Cheat.
Yeah, I don't mind cheating. I think it's fine. Yeah, I think you do it that way. Everybody's good. Jan wants to chime in on making some resolutions that work well. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. I'm confused now because suddenly all I can picture is a needle, psychically hoping a needle comes through because I don't want to pull it. But that's my own issue, Jan. That's not why you called.
Actually, I know how to sew, too, and I've put on more than one button in my lifetime. But I was listening initially to your talk about making resolutions that, you can actually carry out.
Yes.
So let's say you make four. And two, you know you're going to do. For example, I might write down, I'm going to read 12 books this year because I know I'm going to do that. And then I might make a really difficult one but they have to be measurable.
Yes.
You have to understand and under your control.
Right.
Like, I'm going to lose 25 pounds by May 1st or something. You have to have a designated time and you have to have an absolute number. You can't say I'm going to lose weight.
Exactly. You have to have concrete goals. And what you said about making it in your control is key, because if I'm going to spend more time with my family, your family might be busy too, and time is, is more time this or that. It has to be in your control and quantifiable.
Yeah, you might say something like, I'm going to talk with my family and we're going to schedule a trip to Glacier National Park sometime when the kids are off or the grandkids are off on vacation. Or something like that, because then you get together with them, you schedule a time and all that kind of stuff. But you have to make a couple of them that you know are kind of easy, so you can check them off. And you really have to write them down, because unless they're written down, they're just out in the air.
All right. Well, Jan, thank you for the advice. I appreciate it. Happy New Year. Kevin, good news. Someone texted in. They do sell pre-threaded needles with different color threads. They're for traveling. So perhaps, but you still have to know how to thread it through the fabric and into the button.
And this all sounds, I'm rethinking this.
I'm telling you, this resolution, if you don't have this resolution settled by the time we're out of here today, then I don't understand. Let's do this. Then it's news time. Then Steve Dale is here. Steve Dale in one of the most festive holiday sweaters I have ever seen. I can't wait to talk to him about it. Perhaps Kevin will darn it if there is a hole in it later in the year. All of that to come on WGN. Oh, the barking can mean only one thing. Well, one thing isn't that it's Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy until 3 o'clock. The barking would mean that Steve Dale is in the house for his regular visit to the Bill and Wendy show. Steve Dale, Steve Dale's PetWorld.com, Steve Dale's Pet World. What's the Sunday morning show called?
Steve Dale's Pet World.
Yeah, 6:30 on Sunday mornings. And he's always around. We spoke last night. What are you, Facebooking live? Is that what we're doing now?
I'm just doing a video that'll appear
nice
on
video?
Instagram and my Facebook page. But I will Facebook live later if you desire.
No,
happy to do it.
What kind of odd social media you're in. into. You enjoy social media.
I do.
We talked to you last night about this story that came out, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but if people didn't hear us talking yesterday, a federal judge decided that the passed a ruling that said police can shoot a dog when serving a search warrant if the dog barks or moves, which I found incredulous because as a guy who's had a number of dogs and still has a dog, they bark and move at the slightest provocation.
It's what dogs do. It's what people do. Yes. We talk and we move. They bark and they move.
And it's all based on a case in Michigan where police were, short and sweet, police were serving a search warrant. Dogs were in there. They were told the dogs were in there. Immediately upon entering the house, they shot one dog. And then as the dogs retreated to the basement, when the police went to clear the basement, they shot both dogs there too. The couple who owned the dog sued, saying this was a Fourth Amendment violation. The judge said, no, it's not a Fourth Amendment violation. Police have a right to protect themselves if they are in imminent physical danger. And that's where the loophole. And I agree with that part,
too.
Of course they do.
Me too.
Of course they do. But that's where the line is going to be, because what's imminent danger and a dog barking or a dog standing up doesn't necessarily fit that bill.
Elsewhere, except apparently the state of Michigan now, the standard is the same as for people. You have to feel threatened as a police officer in some way in order to have an excuse, if you will, to fire a weapon at a dog.
Right.
This gives more latitude, it seems, to law enforcement, and latitude that is poorly defined. I mean, really? A dog moving? A dog barking?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
If a dog is charging you with teeth bared, I would say, yes, I am in imminent danger.
Yeah.
If a dog is hiding in a corner and then starts to move or bark, I don't know if that... And granted, police don't have a lot of time, just like they don't with humans, to make those calls. And it's a lot of times spur of the moment. But if you're... And you mentioned this last night. More and more departments are training their officers in how to deal with dogs, because this is happening all over the country on a regular basis.
It is. Let's better understand canine signaling, what dogs are trying to tell us. And a lot of these occurrences don't happen within a household. They happen in a yard, next to a yard, next to a yard, next to a yard as to where the police are going. So they can be headed down the street, but they want to cut through some yards.
Sure.
A dog is going to defend maybe property. That's what, in some cases, we even have dogs for. And those dogs can be shot.
And they're just doing their job.
And it's happening all over the country that these dogs are being shot. And I've been aware of the issue for some time. So we need to do something about it. This has to stop. And Michigan, in fact, is moving in the very opposite direction of what should be happening.
Well, and one thing I found interesting, and it sounds like a joke when you said it last night, but it's not. Just the mere fact, if they were carrying hot dogs or cheese and just throw a dog is going to go, hey, meat, I'm going that way.
Well, we've been telling postal carriers to do that for some time.
Yeah.
And it works. I mean, you know, if you want the dog to go the other way, throw a hot dog in that direction, and 9 times out of 10. The other thing is that most canine aggression is actually based in fear.
Okay.
So dogs that are afraid will attack. If they're not afraid, they won't. So if you can mitigate that fear, that's helpful. And how can you tell if the dog is afraid or not? And that's where education comes in.
Right.
I mean, it's not necessarily rocket science to understand dogs. It just takes some education.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Steve Dales here. Of course, if you have a question for Steve, you are welcome to jump in. New Year's is coming. We were talking about...
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year. Kevin was talking about his resolution. He's going to learn to sew.
Steve, I've never heard anything so lame in my career.
No, listen, let him have his resolution. We don't judge.
Learn how to sew.
He wants to put a button on. He wants to fix holes in his pockets. He doesn't want to look like one of...
fix holes in his pockets.
He doesn't want to look like Oliver Twist.
Is that why he never pays for lunch around
here? That's right. His money falls right out because he doesn't... But once he learns to sew, man, there's the cash. So we make resolutions. Should pets and pet owners have resolutions as well?
Well, I've got some, This will be my first announcement of any of this because I'm going to talk about it Sunday on the radio. But now you beat me to it, and I'm happy to talk to you about it. So, veterinary visits are down for dogs and cats.
Really?
That's crazy. I mean, we live in a nation where we care for our animals. Statistically, over 90% of the people who have a dog and cat. And by the way, there are more pets than kids in America. So all of
pets
these
don't
people
talk back.
Really?
And don't go to college.
That's right. So
two bonus points.
All these people care about their animals, but they're not seeing the veterinarian. Now, why is that? There are lots of reasons for that.
Expense, probably.
That's
I'm guessing
one of them.
At the top.
That's one of them. I don't know about at the top or in the middle, or but it is one of them.
Right.
One of them is that we get stressed and anxious just thinking about it. Statistically, about 40% of people with a cat will get just totally freaked out just thinking about going to the veterinarian because they know how stressed out their cat is.
Okay.
So you take out the carrier and the cat is already on its way to Mexico, you know? So this doesn't have to be this way.
Right.
The dog is in the car, realizes, uh-oh, I'm here, and puts on the brakes.
Yeah.
And you feel horrible about dragging the dog into the veterinary clinic. So, again, doesn't have to be that way. There's an initiative that's happening or will be happening in 2017 with veterinarians, veterinary technicians, other veterinary professionals. I'm proud to say I'm a part of it, okay. Called Fear Free. And it's to eliminate stress and anxiety of visiting the veterinary clinic. My part is to communicate to pet owners because it really begins at home.
Yeah.
So veterinarians, absolutely. Have a role to play in all this, totally. However, it begins in the house.
Okay.
Because if the pet is so stressed out by the time the pet gets to the clinic,
well,
or
how are you stressing a pet out by now, and again, this is coming from a guy who's had dogs for 25 years. And when they have to go to the vet, I say, hey, we're gonna go for a ride. Cool. They're in the car.
Yeah.
Now they know when we get there, they look and they're like, okay, but I don't have to drag them in.
But for a lot of people they do.
Right. But at some point, once you're there, you know,
you're there,
and
but
I hate to say it. At some point, it is a dog. You control where the dog is going to go.
Well,
or the cat.
Yes and no. So if you're for cats, people physically can't get them there.
Right.
I bet we get had enough time, we'll get calls from people or text saying
that they just can't get their
cat
in the
physically
carrier.
Do it.
Right.
You know, and if you feel badly about doing something, Brian, you're not going to do it.
Well, sure.
You know. So if an anvil falls on your head, like Wile E. Coyote, remember that?
Yes.
No matter where he went, anvils fell on his head.
Which I never understood. It seemed out of the realm of possibility, but I let it go. I suspended reality to enjoy him getting squished.
However, if that's the reality, every time you walk into the WGN studio and one of those falls on your head,
right.
You're probably not walking in the WGN studio all that often again. So if bad things happen, we get stressed out, we tend to not want to do those things.
Okay.
Again and again and
so
again,
how do
right?
How do we then calm our pets at home so that we can get them to the vet?
An awfully long explanation, but I will say you can do it. And
is liquor involved?
For us, perhaps that's a choice you can make. I do not think that's necessarily a poor idea.
Okay, but for the pets, probably not.
Probably not.
A couple shots of Jaeger, then the dog goes right to the vet. Doesn't care where it's going. Sure, I'll get in the car. Where are you taking me?
I'm just giggling along. I cannot endorse officially that thought.
No, I understand you do not.
Yes, yes. I would be in big trouble if I did.
So you're doing that. So that's one. The resolution, take your pet, get your pet to the vet.
And specifically, sort of a sub, as you do outlines, you do number Roman numeral one and then A. So a sub portion of this would be cat-friendly practices. These are, obviously, if you have a cat, these are practices that have said, veterinary practices that have said, I am going to go above and beyond for cats. We are going to do some things. We're going to jump through hoops. We're going to be certified as cat-friendly.
Oh, wow.
And I love that idea. And I'm going to be part of that in 2017 as well.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations.
Well,
no,
it's the cats that benefit.
Well, listen. They don't know.
We'll all have sardines and be happy.
Yeah, everybody's happy. You get some catnip, you get a fuzzy toy, you run around, I'll get a laser pointer, drive you crazy.
You should see what I do with catnip.
I can only imagine. I see how you are without catnip. I can't imagine what you're like with catnip.
Big trouble.
Steve Dale's here, of course. All right, give me one more pet or pet owner resolution before we go to break.
Another pet resolution would be to make a difference for all companion animals. So many of us have a pet.
Yes.
And we feel frustrated about what we can do for all the homeless animals. And there are things you can do locally, and there are things you can do nationally.
Okay.
If you can't give money, that's fine. You can give time. If you can't give time, you can give product, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, you could bring in extra newspaper, extra towels that you have.
Okay.
If we all participated and we all did something, we would make a difference for Chicago's homeless animals.
So a shelter will take old towels. If you all of a sudden it's white sale season, people are buying new towels and sheets, your old towels and sheets, you can take them to a shelter and they'll take them to help out.
Yes.
Oh, very nice. Well, see, that's very easy.
Instead
of instead of tossing them out or doing using them as drop cloths. That's excellent. Steve Dale's here. If you have a question, and surprise, surprise, Steve, many people have questions for you.
I'm here with many answers.
981-7200. We'll get your questions for Steve, and then we'll talk about how to keep your, hopefully we'll have time, how to keep your pets calm over New Year's Eve. And Steve
hockey, has, too.
And the hockey story, and your other initiative. Maybe we don't take calls. No, we'll take we'll take some calls.
I'll just be with you for 4 or 5 hours.
That's fine. You could stay. Bubala comes in at 3.
I'm sure he'd be thrilled. Yes, yes.
All right, he doesn't have anything. What else is going to happen? What's he going to talk about? Expelling Russian diplomats? Pisha.
I don't know.
We'll
what did you say? Pisha.
Pisha.
You cannot say that on the radio.
I already did.
Uh-oh.
Right on. Brian Noonan in for Bill and Wendy. Steve Dale is in the studio with me. He's going to answer some of your pet questions. But before we do that, real quick, I was listening the other morning, and then I saw the video. You were in here with a dog from the South Suburban Humane Society called Turkey, a little a black lab. And we won't talk about his self-control issues over by the tree. We'll leave that to people can figure it out. But very interesting, you were on, and your segment was talking about, and you do it with Steve Cochran all the time, getting these animals adopted. And that dog was very cute.
We do it once a month, and that was my 12th time this year. Pete McMurray did it for us, and that was 12 times in a row that we've adopted out. Yeah.
Well, the next guest scheduled to come on after the after this dog who could not control himself was Doc Emmerich, the unbelievably great hockey announcer.
Legend, yes.
And then, why don't you tell what happened?
Then I got contacted by Doc Emmerich. I'm a hockey fan. It's like, okay, really? I didn't believe it. I didn't want, someone's pranking me, you know?
Right.
And I recognize his voice. I mean, this really is Doc Emmerich. Yeah. He tells me, first off, he's a fan of the show.
That's nice.
It's like, okay, now someone more than my mom is getting up at 6:30 Sunday morning.
Don't so discount any listener.
I do not. And I was thrilled. That alone made my, not my day, not my month, my decade.
There you go.
But moreover, he says, I'm going to pay for that adoption of Turkey, and I'm going to pay for the next 5 adoptions from South Suburban Humane.
Look at
Isn't
that.
Isn't that cool?
That is excellent. So, Doc Emmerich, we salute you. That's great.
Yep.
And Turkey got adopted
that
day, correct?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And that was our 12th of the year.
That's fantastic. And I mentioned to you, because I asked, is that the South Suburban Humane Society in Chicago Heights, which is where I've adopted 3 of my 4 dogs.
Incredible.
It's yeah. They do great work
they
down
do.
There. And we've loved all the dogs we've gotten from there. It's a great place. So
you need another?
Congratulations. what, are you talking to my wife? we've had dogs for 24 years. When I say this, it sounds horrible. We're down to our last dog.
What?
We only have 1 left.
Yeah, yeah.
We have 1 left. And there's a point where, you know, now we're... And I'm hoping this dog stays for as long as she can stay. I'm not pushing her out the door, figuratively or literally. She's welcome to live as long as she wants. But I don't know if I want to bring another dog into the mix because I can kind of see the end. You know, it's like when your kids are getting old enough and they'll go because I like
you're not that old.
No,
what do you mean
like
see
to,
the end?
We like to travel. We like to do some things, and I feel bad about boarding. So I don't know. But my wife is pushing for another dog. So
I'm in her corner.
I never say never. I know our dog probably would like company because she's never had the house to herself. She's not doesn't seem to be handling it well. But that's that. But enough of my
questions.
And fiddle-dee-dee. People want to talk to you.
What?
Steve.
Okay.
You heard me. I'm channeling Gone with the Wind. Henry's been hanging on. He has a question.
Or Peanuts. Yes.
Hi, Henry.
Hi. I'll try to make it quick. Female pit bull raised with kids and with a cat and never a problem. The owner had to give her up because she couldn't take her to her new apartment. My granddaughter took her in. She's got 4 dogs, and after about 5 months, starting to get aggressive. Had a fight with her other female pit bull, did some damage. And then
things just don't change because they change. I mean, there's got to be an explanation. So the first thing I'd look at is medical. Rule out anything medical. By the way, the fact that this dog is what you're calling a pit bull has nothing to do with anything. I could care less about that. But I do care about the medical condition of the dog. That's number one. If the dog is in sound medical condition, then bring in an expert, an animal behavior consultant, a veterinary behaviorist perhaps, who can help you kind of figure this out. So my first question is this dog aggressive to only other dogs or people as well?
No, not aggressive to people and not aggressive to the cats in the home either.
All right. So is it just this one dog? I mean, sometimes dogs don't like one another, just like people do, you know. So is it just this one dog or is it all dogs?
Well, it was just the one dog, and it wasn't right away. She's lived for about 5 months. It's this one dog, we thought, but then a few days later, she kind of nipped at one of the other ones.
All right. So what you want to do in the meantime, till you bring in this expert help and get the veterinary input, is keep everybody safe. So make sure that when there is no adult supervision, these two dogs are not left alone.
Okay.
And also on the street, you mentioned hot dogs. That can be a magic word. So the dog is paying attention to you and not other dogs on the street or whoever's walking the dog. Okay?
All right. Well, good luck, Henry. Hope it works out. Yeah, that's – and you mentioned this – People tend to think it's a breed thing. It's not a breed thing.
No, nothing to do
with it. It's just temperament. Temperament of a
certain
dog.
Yeah, and something. Well, this dog's always had a great temperament, apparently.
Right.
So something must have happened. And I have no clue what that could be.
And then too, it seems to me odd that the dogs are all getting along for like 5 months, and then something.
Exactly.
Happens.
So the
sounds
experts
like
will
girl,
figure
mean
out
mean girl situation. Where the other dogs were mocking the one.
I think so too.
I think that's it. That's my non-expert opinion. You know, I love to give my non-expert opinion. It's worth the money you're paying for it.
I agree with that.
Take it for what it's worth.
Yes. Mine's worth about twice that.
I know. That's why we have you in. And I'm not talking about dogs. Diana has a question. Hi, Diana.
Hi, I had a question. Do you have any advice on how to get a dog and a cat to get along better?
Well, are they being first introduced? Give me a little more than that.
Okay, so we've had the dog for quite a long time, about 13 years old, but she's very sweet, still has a lot of energy, and we're bringing a cat into the family.
Oh, probably there'll be no problem. Has this dog lived with cats ever before?
No, they're not really getting along so far.
Okay, so what you do is, remember, cats are the king of the house. They rule.
Okay.
And if you remember that rule and the fact that they need to feel safe, they need to feel in control, ultimately you'll do fine. I would put the dog on a leash and reward the dog for essentially ignoring the cat.
Okay.
And in the meantime, if the dog does that often enough, the cat will probably muster the courage on its own to investigate. You can't push a cat to do anything. So don't think along those terms. Also make sure that the cat understands I have escape routes. I can go up high. The dog can't do that. I have hiding places that the dog cannot get to. And as long as the cat understands I'm going to be safe and I have control of the situation, your dog is unleashed to encourage that message. Over time, I think you will be okay.
All right. Good luck, Diana. Hope it works out
for
you. Well, as you can imagine, Steve, there's millions of calls, but we can't get to them because we are out of time.
No!
But people can always reach you on Sunday mornings here at WGN.
Yes,
they can read stevedalespetworld.com. They can read your blogs. They can do everything else, get all the information, and access your expertise there.
Indeed, they can.
Would that be true?
It's very, very true.
Are you staying in the country for a little bit?
I am,
right,
yes.
Good. Steve's always jetting about. Always good to see you. Thank you for taking some time. Happy New Year if I don't see you beforehand. And, you know, we'll try to put some of those resolutions. And no talking to my wife about this this extra
Feliz
dog.
Año Nuevo, mi amigo.
Ah, sí.
What did I say?
Buenas noches.